VOA's Joe Ramsey with this worldwide news update. U.S. President Donald Trump's administration continued making its case Sunday on the need for tariffs on imports from Canada, China, and Mexico. VOA's Veronica Balderas-Iglesias has the story.
The United States is set to impose tariffs on imports from Canada, China, and Mexico starting Tuesday. It argues those countries haven't done enough to stop the flow of fentanyl and illegal border crossings into the U.S. U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press.
These countries have an opportunity to get on board with the President of the United States and to partner with us to deal with illegal immigration, to take back their individuals that have been in our country illegally.
Analysts warn the tariffs could result in price increases on fresh produce and automobile parts, among other commodities that Americans buy. U.S. President Donald Trump took to his Truth social media platform Sunday and acknowledged the potential disruptions, writing in part, "Will there be some pain? Yes, maybe, and maybe not. But we will make America great again, and it will all be worth the price that must be paid." Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau Saturday announced retaliatory measures, including 25% tariffs on U.S. goods if the Trump tariffs go into effect. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum also called on the U.S. and Canada to continue working together to tackle the shared challenges, but announced on X that her country is ready to impose tariff and non-tariff retaliatory measures. Veronica Valderas-Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio told Panama's President Jose Raul Moreno on Sunday that the Central American ally must reduce Chinese influence over the Panama Canal area or face potential retaliation from the Trump administration. AP correspondent Donna Warder reports.
Rubio, on his first foreign trip as America's top diplomat, held face-to-face talks with Moreno, who later said that there's no real threat of retaking the canal or the use of force. President Trump has demanded that the canal be returned to U.S. control, and Rubio told Moreno that Trump had made a preliminary determination that China's presence in the canal area violates a treaty that led to the U.S. turning the waterway over to Panama in 1999. I'm Donna Warder.
U.S. authorities continue to investigate last week's mid-air crash in the Washington skies. A passenger jet and an Army helicopter collided in the deadliest U.S. aviation accident in nearly 25 years. VOA's Arash Arvasadi has more.
67 people died, including all passengers and flight crews from both aircraft. Speaking to reporters from the Oval Office, President Trump suggested the policies of his predecessor, President Joe Biden, contributed to the disaster.
This was all caused by bad rules, regulations, and other things by the Biden administration.
Trump claimed previous administrations lowered standards for the hiring of air traffic controllers, and he blamed diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI initiatives in the federal government for that. He said he reversed those initiatives with executive orders last week. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
Listen, it's one thing for internet pundits to spew off conspiracy theories. It's another for the President of the United States to throw out idle speculation as bodies are still being recovered and families still being notified. It just turns your stomach.
Meanwhile, investigators from the National Transportation Safety Board, or NTSB, worked to piece together clues from the cockpit voice recorder and flight data recovered from the passenger jet that showed its altitude around 99 meters. While data from the control tower showed the helicopter closer to 60 meters at the time of the crash. The investigation remains ongoing into the discrepancy. Arash Arvasadi, VOA News.
That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website, voanews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Monday, February 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi's president threatens action against neighbor Rwanda over the conflict in DRC.
The Burundian forces were recruited across our border just to destabilize us. So it's Burundi that is trying to overthrow the government of Rwanda.
Mozambique urges its refugees in Malawi to return home. King Mswati III of Eswatini orders the arrest of anyone suspected of corruption. A Nigerian initiative paves the way for the inclusion of the hearing impaired in technology. Lawyers for jailed Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Besigye welcome a Supreme Court ruling.
The decision means all the cases where accused persons had been convicted by the court-martial for criminal offenses and especially civilians, they should be released forthwith if they had challenged that decision.
And Trump defends the need for tariffs or imports from Canada, China, and Mexico. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi President Evariste Ndayishimiye has warned Rwanda that he will not hesitate to act if the conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo continues. He accused Rwanda of planning to attack Burundi using territories captured by the M23. Moses Javier Rimana reports.
It has been almost 10 years now since relations between Burundi and Rwanda began deteriorating. And now, the two countries risk direct armed confrontation after the warning by Burundi President Evariste Ndayishimiye. President Ndayishimiye says that Rwanda's plan is not just to use the M23 rebels to take the territory of Democratic Republic of Congo, but ultimately to attack Burundi.
Si Rwanda continue after the conquest,
he says that if Rwanda continues evading, conquering any DRC territory, he will not sit and watch that happen. The Burundi president says that Rwanda is training young Burundian refugees and arming them to prepare for an attack on Burundi. He says if it is not de-escalated, it will turn into a regional conflict. Burundi accuses Rwanda of harboring the 2015 failed coup plotters who wanted to depose the country's former president, Pierre Nkurunziza. Burundi says Kigali militarily trained young Burundian refugees who joined the Red Tabara rebel group that has carried out several attacks on Burundi through the eastern part of DRC last year, killing dozens of civilians, including the Burundian soldiers. Rwanda's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Olivier Nduhungirehe, says that President Ndayishimiye's allegations are not legitimate. He says that Burundi's own deployment of its forces in DRC aims to weaken Rwanda.
They are trying to destabilize Rwanda because they are allied with the FDLR genocidal force. The Burundian forces were recruited across our border just to destabilize us. So it's Burundi that is trying to overthrow the government of Rwanda through these forces and with the alliances of the FDLR, of the European mercenaries, some EDRC and other forces.
More than 700 people have been killed, and while at least 2,800 people were injured since the M23 rebel group captured Goma, a key town in North Kivu, located in the eastern part of DRC last week. The Democratic Republic of Congo and Burundi boycotted last Wednesday's meeting of the East African Community Heads of State Summit. On Friday, the South African Development Community conducted an extraordinary summit, which condemned the M23 rebels for violating the ceasefire agreement. Brandon Chintu is a Ugandan lawmaker in the parliament's Committee on Defense and Internal Affairs.
The ongoing crisis in eastern DRC has far-reaching implications for the region. It therefore threatens economic stability, increases the risk of humanitarian disasters, and fuels insecurity that could spill over into neighboring countries.
Despite calls from the international community for a ceasefire, the Rwandan-backed M23 are said to have continued their attack towards southern Kivu city of Bukavu. Kinshasa has also accused Rwanda of smuggling minerals out of the country. Rwanda denies backing the rebels and other allegations. The East African Community and the South African Development Community are expected to conduct a joint summit soon to address the current violence in the eastern DRC. Moses Aviarimana for Voice of America.
Authorities say at least 773 people were killed in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo's largest city of Goma and its vicinity this past week amid fighting with Rwandan-backed rebels. The announcement comes as DRC troops fought back against Rwanda-backed rebels who the UN said are moving fast in the South Kivu province. This after seizing the region's largest city and an international airport. The lead attorney in the trial of Ugandan opposition leader Dr. Kizza Besigye and his co-accused says she is hopeful that the rule of law will prevail in the country. This after the Ugandan Supreme Court ruled Friday, January 31st, that trying civilians in general court-martial and military courts is unconstitutional. President Museveni has described the ruling as a wrong decision. Besigye and his co-accused, Obey Lutale, are charged with unlawful possession of ammunition and a firearm. Former Kenyan Justice Minister Martha Karua is the leader of the 32-member defense team. She tells me that the court judgment will be relied upon as precedents not only in Uganda, but in the East African region and the world.
The Supreme Court of Uganda acquitted itself well. It made a landmark decision of great jurisprudential value. The judgment, especially of the Chief Justice, which I have gone through, is very well written, and all the others are also well written. I emphasize the judgment of the Chief Justice because it's the one that contains orders. This is a judgment that we rely on in the region, and it can be relied on and be a source of precedent worldwide.
What do you think the decision means for Dr. Besigye's case moving forward?
Moving forward, the decision means all the cases where accused persons had been convicted by the court-martial for criminal offenses and especially civilians, they should be released forthwith if they had challenged that decision. So for our colleague Aaron Kizza, the lawyer who was arbitrarily jailed by the court-martial, he ought to be released. We will be pursuing orders for his release from the court because he had challenged that decision in a constitutional petition. For Dr. Kizza Besigye and Mr. Obed Lutale, it is up to the interpretation of the Attorney General. But in our view, they ought to be released forthwith because the court that ordered their arrest or the body that ordered their arrest has no power to order arrest of civilians. We do not know how the Attorney General will interpret, but the courts of judicature are there in case there is any hesitation. What is very clear, however, is that we are not obliged to appear before the court-martial at all as advocates. And our client's argument that the court-martial has no jurisdiction over them has been upheld. We are very happy with that state of affairs.
President Yoweri Museveni has responded to the ruling, describing it as a wrong decision. He added also that the country is not governed by judges. What do you suppose the president is referring to?
Uganda is a democracy, is a republic. That's what the constitution says. As for the interpretation of the constitution and the laws of Uganda, the mandate to do that is with the courts of judicature. They have spoken. I would imagine that all the authorities in Uganda, including His Excellency the President, Yoweri Museveni, will be advised of the implications of the ruling by the Attorney General. And I think they will obey the rule of law because Uganda is a democracy. So we have great expectations that after the implications of the ruling are well understood and he has pretty good advisers, that the country will uphold the rule of law. Remember that even the East African community, one of the key foundational principles is the rule of law principle, that the country who are members of EAC will follow their domestic laws, which include the constitution, which is the main law in any country, and will also follow the good practices of international law. So we are hopeful that the rule of law will prevail in Uganda.
Former Kenyan Justice Minister Martha Karua is the leader of the 32-member defense team representing Ugandan opposition leader Kizza Besigye. She was speaking with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Mozambican authorities have assured thousands of refugees who fled to Malawi following the recent post-election unrest that peace has been restored in their country and that they are welcome to return home. Officials from Mozambique's Institute of Disaster Management Affairs made the comment on Friday during a visit to a refugee camp in which hosts asylum seekers from Mozambique. Lamek Masina reports from Nsanje, Malawi.
Ruiza Semameki is head of the Institute of Disaster Management Affairs in Mozambique. Speaking through an interpreter, she thanked the Malawi government for taking care of asylum seekers from her country. She says, on behalf of our President Daniel Francisco Chapo, we are sending our message of thanks from the government of Mozambique and we recognize all the efforts of the government of Malawi. The second message is for our brothers here. We are doing all efforts necessary for them to return home as soon as possible. Thousands of Mozambicans have fled to Malawi to escape violence triggered by the disputed October presidential election. Hilda Kate Makausiwa is the senior administrative and operations manager for the Department of Refugees in Malawi. She says the screening and the registration of refugees continues.
To date, as a department for refugees, we have registered a total of 3,640 households, representing 7,456. As of yesterday, we had finished registration in Mwanza, Neno, Kunene Kude, as well as Mulanje, which were the additional sites where we had not gone through to screen and register together with immigration.
She said her department has so far received no new asylum seekers from Mozambique. Meki of the Institute of Disaster Management Affairs in Mozambique says peace has now returned to the country. Malawian authorities say they are struggling to provide for the refugees because the situation comes at a time when over a quarter of Malawi's 20 million people are facing food shortages due to an El Nino-induced drought. However, during the visit, the Mozambican delegation donated food to the refugees. Kausiwa of the Department of Refugees in Malawi appreciated the donation.
And in the package, there is some rice, there's maize flour, there's also salt and some beans. These are critical foods that can be provided to the community, noting that the food has been a challenge since these people started coming in.
However, a Mozambican traditional leader, Raymond Komando of the Muliri area, said the refugees would only return if there was concrete proof of their safety. He said they fled to Malawi to escape being killed and chased from their homes like animals. Plataforma Decide, a monitoring group in Mozambique, said in December that more than 200 people have been killed since post-election protests started in October. Lamek Masina, VOA News, Sanje District.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Monday, February 3rd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. King Mswati III of Eswatini has ordered the arrest of anyone suspected of corruption. He also ordered the protection of individuals who blow the whistle on fraud and mismanagement. Eswatini local media report that the king gave the orders on Friday, January 31st, while opening parliament. But some say it can be difficult to report the problem because some loyalists use the king's name to engage in corruption. Government spokesperson Alpheus Dumalo tells me that the king believes corruption is a hindrance to Eswatini's development.
Well, it is not the first time that the king have actually insisted that government should take drastic measures to curb or minimize or eradicate corruption in every facet in the Kingdom of Eswatini. Yes, this time around also, during the speech from the throne, the king specifically mentioned that government have got to up the game in terms of arresting those that are involved in corrupt practices, especially from the perspective of certain investors that have come into the country in the few past years and have hoodwinked the Maswati to invest their hard-earned cash into dubious investment schemes. After those investment schemes collapsed or the people behind it disappeared with large sums in millions that belongs to a Maswati. And of course, the king is urging government to ensure that proper steps are taken to deal with that aspect and phase of corruption.
What do you say to those who say that it's difficult to fight corruption? In fact, that some people are carrying on corruption in the name of the king, and most often not much is done to them.
The first people that must be arrested and taken to court to face justice are those who are actually doing corruption in the name of the king. The rest can follow. If there are those that could be found that they are abusing the name of their majesties in the country to be involved and indulged into corrupt practices, we are saying then, therefore, those should be the first target of the law in as far as eradicating and fighting the scourge of corruption is concerned in the Kingdom of Eswatini.
When we talk about corruption in Eswatini, now, how would you describe the level of corruption? Is this something that is prevalent?
Corruption is not only prevalent in Eswatini per se. It is an international phenomenon. It is a human nature to be involved in practices of corruption. What we are doing in Eswatini is that we have taken an intentional step to ensure that we deal with corruption head on. That is why we have formed even a task team, tasked specifically to deal with the issue of corruption. So it is not like it is out of hand or is out of proportion. What we are saying is that as a country, we have taken a serious position against corruption. We have put in place measures and we have formed organs and state agencies to deal specifically with corruption. That is why we have an agency called the Anti-Corruption Commission in the country to deal with corruption specifically.
Alpheus Dumalo is the Eswatini government spokesperson. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mbabane. The Trump administration continued making its case on Sunday on the need for tariffs on imports from Canada, China, and Mexico. The three countries have threatened retaliatory measures, but say they are still open to dialogue and cooperation with the United States. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
The United States is set to impose tariffs on imports from Canada, China, and Mexico starting Tuesday. It argues those countries haven't done enough to stop the flow of fentanyl and illegal border crossings into the U.S. U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem commented on the matter Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press.
These countries have an opportunity to get on board with the President of the United States and to partner with us to deal with illegal immigration, to take back their individuals that have been in our country illegally.
And tariffs could result in price increases on fresh produce and automobile parts, among other commodities that Americans buy. U.S. President Donald Trump took to his Truth social media platform Sunday and acknowledged the potential disruptions, writing in part, "Will there be some pain? Yes, maybe, and maybe not. But we will make America great again, and it will all be worth the price that must be paid." Secretary of Homeland Security Kristen Noem also addressed the matter during her appearance on NBC.
If prices go up, it's because of other people's reactions to America's laws.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau Saturday announced retaliatory measures, including 25% tariffs on U.S. goods if the Trump tariffs go into effect. But Trudeau's country still bets on bilateral cooperation. Canadian Ambassador to the U.S. Kirsten Hillman told ABC's This Week show.
We're going with officials from the White House, our police agency, to China in the coming days to try and grapple with the precursors issue. So it's hard to know what more we can do, but we're obviously open to any other suggestions that come our way.
Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum also called on the U.S. and Canada to continue working together to tackle the shared challenges, but announced on X that her country is ready to impose tariff and non-tariff retaliatory measures. China announced it will challenge the U.S. tariffs move at the World Trade Organization, but didn't specify what countermeasures it is considering and urged Washington to engage in dialogue. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with Burundi's Rodrigue Quizera, who made it a hat-trick of senior men's titles at the European Champions Club's Cup cross-country in Albufeira on Sunday. The Burundian international added a third title to his previous victories in 2022 and 2023. He clocked 27 minutes 02 seconds for the 9,280 meters race, finishing 15 seconds ahead of his Palace de Castellon teammate Indikumu Miayo, who held on for the runner-up spot by a single second ahead of 19-year-old Kenyan's Charles Rotich. Francine Nio Mukunzi, who raced in both the 5,000 meters and 10,000 meters at the Paris 2024 Olympic Games, produced an imperious display, taking gold in the female category in 31 minutes 44 seconds. President of the Association of National Olympic Committees of Africa, Mustafa Beraf, may run unopposed and for re-election at the General Assembly scheduled for the 15th of March in Algiers. Beraf became president in 2018, and part of his achievement include the construction and equipment of the headquarters of the African NOCs, providing modern infrastructures that improve the performance of athletes and strategic alliances with FIFA and World Aquatics that facilitated the construction of 50 international-level football fields and 40 Olympic swimming pools, thus offering new opportunities for emerging talents. In cycling news, the Union Cyclists International has insisted that it has no intention to move September's World Road Championships from Rwanda to Switzerland or anywhere else. Despite the ongoing Congo conflict 8 months before the race, the governing body insists that the area is safe. Uncertainty has grown after media speculation in recent days suggested a possible plan B for the landmark event in the continent as the Rwandan-backed armed group M23 continues its offensive in eastern DR Congo. Concerns and fears among cycling teams prompted the UCI to step in and publicly reassure the cycling world 8 months before the competition, which is also the first time a world championship has been held on African soil. In cricket news, India sealed the under-19 Women's T20 Cricket World Cup title by beating South Africa by 9 wickets at the Bayuama's Oval in Kuala Lumpur on Sunday. The Indian women secured the win in 11.2 overs, chasing down the targets of 83 set by the young South African women and defending their ICC Women's Under T20 crown. And that does it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
I'm saying have a very good Monday, and that's it for this Monday, February 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.